This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh with Sharat Abdullah here with you on the Morning Run. It's February 13th, it's World Radio Day today, so happy World Radio Day.
Happy World Radio Day.
We want to thank all of you out there for listening in to us day in, day out. And World Radio Day is the day to celebrate radio, the mass media, for reaching out to the widest audience in the world.
That's right. So, exciting day for us.
Indeed. Well, BFM Radio is celebrating World Radio Day, so for more information, visit bfm.my. And we've got quite a lot of things packed up this today to discuss with you. What do we have, Sharat?
Yeah, well, Joyce, we all love to sleep in. But you and I, we're opposite. We love waking up in the early morning, don't we?
Maybe you.
Or not. Yeah. Well, misery loves company. And here's a thought. But what would we benefit from an earlier sunrise? So there's an article from The Guardian. We'll be discussing about that.
Very interesting.
That's right. So now, speaking about waking up early, and perhaps it could be good for you, what would you do to be healthier, Joyce?
I think as I get older, I think a lot about what to do to get healthier. And then I'm trying to change my lifestyle as well.
Okay.
Sleep more if I can, but that's not very possible. Eat healthier.
Cool.
Exercise if I can.
Exercise, sleep, right? Mm. So, well, Bulletproof Coffee founder has spent about $1 million in his quest.
$1 million.
That's right. In his quest to live at the age of 180. What would you do or pay to live longer? So that's from Men's Health.
Interesting. Also, we're going to look into being jack of and Jill of all trades, but master of none. Does that still hold ground today? Because I think with the whole changing landscape and how things with technology and also a lot of people multitasking more thanks to technology could actually be... being jack and Jill of all trades work to your benefit. So we're going to discuss this article that's in FT. So stay tuned to BFM. We'll be back. Welcome back. Joyce, Sharat, and Julian here with you on The Morning Run. And that was Help, I'm Alive by Metric. Now let's turn our attention to this article in Financial Times. It's on the hidden benefits of hiring jacks and Jills of all trades. So apparently studies have found that generalist CEOs fostered much more innovation than more specialized counterparts.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I guess this article is just speaking about whether or not jack of all trades should be taken more seriously, and that idea that previously specialization, the idea of being specialized in your work, I mean, it's no longer relevant.
Yeah, I think this is a relic from the Industrial Revolution, right, where they wanted everybody in the production line to just do one thing and one thing only, so that the entire production process can be a lot more efficient and therefore more profits being generated. And that made us into very boring people, right?
That's right.
As well as, ideas like job satisfaction comes into mind as well, whether the staff well-being is being taken care of if they're just doing one thing all of the time, right? But this question is really about whether you can contribute to the organization by being more all-rounded. And I agree with it. I think you can, you can step out of your comfort zones a lot of times, doing the extra of what you're doing and contribute.
True. And I also think it boils down to the industries that you're working in. Like, for example, in a newsroom, sometimes some newsrooms prefer certain journalists to have beats. And that's quite common to have beats. So it's kind of like specialization. So if you're like on the property beat or banking beat, so you will know that industry a bit more. So if there's any developments on what you're a specialist in a way, so you can straight away come up with content and understand the subject matter better.
Yeah.
But of course, it's good if you have a beat, but you're also adaptable to pick up other stories if possible.
Yeah, I think that happens in the stockbroking industry as well, where you find a lot of analysts, maybe not in Malaysia, but elsewhere, maybe in the United States, right? They have covered their sector for all their lives, right? In the past 20, 30 years, and they know every single person in that industry.
Yeah.
They have them on their WhatsApp or Rolodex and just tap on their contacts for information and messages and things like that. So these are such specialist guys But even then, in the investment industry, that is becoming being displaced because business models are changing, and people are making investment decisions in different ways today. You know, with the revolution coming from the ETFs, and prices are falling, so our roles are changing because of what's happening in the marketplaces.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think it boils down to adaptability as well. I mean, as a journalist nowadays, sometimes you're pursuing a story, but you know, you have to do the content for different platforms. Like maybe in BFM, we have to do content for radio, but also slice and cut the content to put up on social media. You know, so it's you can be specialized, but you also need to be adaptable.
Yeah. When I was reading this article, one of the things I was wondering was, you know, one thing I was wondering was how do I raise my children for the next 30 years? You know, do I start identifying their, you know, their inclination? You know, what is their, you know, their natural sort of talent early, or should I expose them? Should I allow, you know, nature to take its course, education to take its course, and just let them be diverse? Because eventually, there's a lot of things that's going to be automated later on. A lot of jobs. Yeah, so a lot.
That's
of things
a challenge, actually, Sharad.
Exactly.
I hear you. What you're saying. I don't have any children, but I hear your challenge. You know, but I don't think there's any time soon that the world would be hiring generalists, or what this article called polymaths, right? Who know everything and who are talented with everything, because I think, to a great degree, the existing modern organizations still require people who are specialized in doing what they do, right? You pick any organizations at all today, you would be expected to have a kind of specialty and then just be a generalist on the side, not really a generalist as your main job and a specialist on the side, right? It's not the other way around yet. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what will happen in 10 years' time.
Yeah, but there's a study in by Claudia Custadio of the Imperial College Business School, and found that generalist chief executives earn more and, you know, fostered more innovation than more specialized counterparts. So I guess wider experience also gave them more job options, and also probably a greater tolerance for risk. And I guess they bring onto the table a more diverse knowledge to their companies as well. So yeah, I guess it boils down to what the companies want and also the changing landscape. It is quite scary, you know, when it comes to bringing up kids nowadays. What do we do? Even like subjects, do we encourage them to do certain like robotics or recoding and things like that? Yeah. There's so many things out there.
Yeah, I would expose them to that, and I'll be open to the idea that they may not be good at it, but I would like them to perhaps have a knowledge, just even a faint knowledge of those subjects, in that pursuit of trying to find what is it that they're going to be good at and what is it that they can be, you know, specialized in later on, and then at the same time being passionate about it.
True. Well, tell us what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. This is BFM 89.9. Welcome back. Joyce, Sharad, and Julian here with you on The Morning Run. That was Stay Gone by the Get Up Kids. Well, who doesn't want to stay gone anytime soon is Bulletproof founder Dave Asprey. He had spent about $1 million in his quest to live to 180. So what would you guys do for the possibility of living longer?
I don't know, man. I mean,
or how much would you spend?
I think life is good, and you want to live for slightly longer rather than die sometime soon, right?
Yeah.
So that's again, I mean, wanting to die is usually against the law of any natural order. But, you know, this story is interesting because to me, it's not only about our desire to live longer, but it's also about healthcare and technology, right, to sustain life. Because all the early benefits and the early low-hanging fruits of expanding life in the earlier parts of the 20th century and before, right? It's all about sanitation and health. But today it's about technology, right? So you've got genetics, you have pharmaceuticals, CRISPR, you know, the CRISPR technology where you can just cut and paste genes to make you a superhuman being, right? And this guy using stem cell to sustain his life. So I think technology for expanding lifespans is just changing in such profound ways.
Yeah, and you're right. It's interesting that we've come a long way, and now I think the average lifespan has also increased. And at the same time, it's posing a problem because aging. You know, there's a lot of countries these days that's becoming an issue where the older generation, they become a sort of
a burden
to the state, so-called, because you know, they no longer are able to contribute as much as they could when they were young, and then the state would have to come in to support them. At the same time, those who are still working, they're on the sort of the high scale of the paycheck because of the, you know, the experience that they've accumulated.
I can see your capitalism Freudian slip coming into play here, because when you say this, it's a burden for the state to take care of them, right? That's a very capitalistic way of looking at things, of course. In the more socialist, social democracies in the northern, in the Nordic states, they have the means, they have enough money, but we don't, right, to take care of their elders. And, you know, you're right. I think funding is one of those things, whether we have enough money. I mean, a lot of statistics coming out of EPF are showing us that the retirement money vanishes in a few years after retirement.
Mm-hmm. So, if we're starting to live longer, we also have to think about sustainability when it comes to income and also, you know, just the quality of life. Mm. I think that's important as well.
Yeah, there's technology in place as well. You know, I love thinking about technology. AI is going to come into place. Perhaps AI could do something about that. I mean, there's definitely studies as to how technology could facilitate the livelihood of the aging population. But what I find interesting in this article, a few things, like you said, that he's putting stem cells on heads, you know, so they grow hair much longer
all over his body,
all over his body. So I could use some of that. And
I think the word here is not longevity. The word here is immortality, right? He wants to achieve a kind of immortality, and you know, just dabbing stem cell all over his body, including his hair, his toes, and so on.
Yeah, and it sounds tiring. One thing I do like about one of the gadgets that he has as well is the oxygen chamber. To which I find, have you guys tried oxygen?
No.
At the hospital? I mean, it's really
have
refreshing.
You?
I have. I've snuck a few times.
You snuck in to a hospital just to score some oxygen.
That's right.
I've heard of people scoring other things, but you, it's oxygen for you, right?
But I think, you know, they're starting to make a business model out of these oxygen chambers in some countries where you can pay a certain amount of money and you can spend a couple of minutes in the oxygen chamber. And that's supposed to help improve the quality of your, your body.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you guys drunk bulletproof coffee before?
No, but our producer, Roshan Gunnison, is a big advocate of that.
Okay, so this is really putting oils into your coffee, right? Instead of putting in milk, you put in butter and maybe perhaps coconut oil, because they're supposed to be very good oils. And it's for people who fast. I think that the point here, not only for people who fast, but you can drink it casually as well. But when you fast, if or when you fast, you need some fats in your body, and this helps really. But the point here is that it just brings up other ideas about our health today, because we have changed our views about cholesterols and about fats. You know, they're no longer the enemies like today. Bulletproof coffee is a reflection of that as well. About fasting, we were talking about fasting yesterday, mm-hmm. right? This is supposed to be really good for health. So the traditional ideas that we have about health, to take meds and pills, that's changing as well. How we exercise, how we establish our fitness. And that has come a long way, I think, over the last 5 years alone.
Yeah, and definitely.
And this is what David Asprey is all about. I think he runs sort of like a tweet where he shares his opinions and thoughts about health and so forth. And I think one of the things was that, like what Julian was saying, with regards to questioning the science of today, you know, because there's a lot of distrust. I mean, a lot of things are perhaps commercially driven as well. That's David Asprey.
Yeah, well, according to Roshan, our producer, he was saying that, you know, David has this thinking where different bodies have different needs. So you can't just follow like a one cut, like one size fits all. You need to, curate it to what your body actually needs. Well, tell us what you think. Join in the conversation. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Next, we have the 6:30 news. But first, When I Come Around by Green Day. Good morning, Joyce, Sharitz and Julian here with you on The Morning Run. And that was The Wire by Haim. Now it's coming up to 6:42 a.m. We've been up since 4 a.m. So are you guys thinking about your afternoon siestas already?
Always.
I'm thinking of a siesta now.
but that's a whole, whole different definition of siesta.
Exactly.
And nothing to do with the siesta in Spain.
Apparently, siesta is only about during the hot hours of the day, right? So by definition, if I sleep now, it's not a siesta. It's just skiving off work.
That's right.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking about Spanish siestas, there's this article in The Guardian that says that, you know, why Spanish sleeping habits are under strain. So apparently, they sleep about 53 minutes less than the average European there. And does that mean that, you know, they are actually a nation of sleepwalkers?
Yeah, because, where this is coming from is because of that break that they have in between. I think they probably sleep in the afternoon just to get away from the heat. And after that, they finish work. Because of that, they come back in for work and then they finish up a bit later. And then after that, there's dinner and supper. So it ends up...
Like about 10 o'clock, right? Having dinner at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, about having dinner at 10 o'clock. And then by the time they're ready to go to bed, it's like 1 a.m., 2 a.m.
And that's the reason why they need the siesta in the first place. Like, it's a never-ending cycle.
How hot can it be, though?
Well, Spain gets as hot as 35 degrees in the summer. That's the hottest time of the year, which is nothing for us Malaysians. Yeah. But, you know, the history of siesta, it was established because it sort of gave a kind of respite to the Spaniards from working in the farms when it was too hot. So sleep between 2 and 5. And I guess this would be a no-no to all today's efficiency consultants, right? This is bad for business and this is bad for the economy. And that's why Spain is not very successful in the European Union.
Yeah, well, they are not the best performing countries in the European Union. But when I was reading this article, it's probably something that we could relate to. I mean, weather-wise, I mean, we're probably hot all year round, except for them. They only go through this in the summer. Like Julian was saying, you know, we started off with a nation of farmers. A lot of people probably try and avoid the sun as much as possible. They wake up early, go out and work, and then by noon they're back home.
That's what I do in Penang when I go to Penang.
Oh, what do you do in Penang?
Exactly that. Wake up early and get back in at 12 o'clock because it's just too hot in Penang.
So wake up early to go eat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but do you guys know that I think a lot of maybe not a lot of people are aware that in 1982, we were 1 hour behind. I mean, our time zone was...
I remember that. Yeah, half an hour.
Yeah, and so that would make us the same time as Bangkok. And I think if you've been to Bangkok, sunrise is about 6 o'clock or something. And, you know, I'm wondering whether or not that has anything to do with productivity.
Could be, because, you know, the current thinking, and I guess siesta goes against the grain here, is that you got to sleep at whatever times that's good for your body, right? And that means like sleep when it's dark and rise when the sun rises. Mm-hmm. So the siesta is totally out of sync with that.
Yeah, but you know, having more daylight in your day, would that actually make you more productive? I mean, and then having having dusk at about 6 plus, would that make your life better? I mean, in a sense, people get stuck in traffic, it's much cooler perhaps. So.
I'm not sure, because I think it depends on the individual, because some people are night owls and they end up working better at night, you know, from home or
I don't think it matters because the mobile phone.
Yeah, that's
right. You're not going to sleep your normal times because of the mobile phones.
Exactly. Well, tell us what you think. WhatsApp us from your mobile phone at 01-878-9899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. This is BFM 89.9. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Joyce, Julian and Sharitz here with you on The Morning Run. Thank you so much for all your comments. We have a couple of them on WhatsApp and Twitter as well. What do we have, Sharitz?
Yes, so we have Dr. RJK who sent us a WhatsApp saying that subspecialization has also affected the medical field. General specialists are reducing in numbers because of peer pressure of doing subspecialization. So, we're having less generalists in the hospital. So that must not be a good thing.
Yeah, Colin also wrote in to say that in Seville, the temperature can get up to about 38 degrees. I'm sure 40 plus in the summer is sometimes achieved. So there you go. Your siesta is needed.
Also, with regards to whether it would benefit us from waking up earlier, Michael tweeted in saying, you know, wake up early and drink 500 ml of water daily.
All?
It helps.
Is that all? 500 ml? That's quite little, right? I thought it's supposed to be 3 liters or something.
Mm. Yeah, I think I do more than that. And at the same time, Lo Chuan Tuck, there's a WhatsApp coming from him. He's a generalist. Well, again, he's from the hospital. I'm a hospital pharmacist working in the public sector. Boss will love a generalist around, but working in a sector where reward and recognition are hard to come by, doing extra work or knowing more do not feel rewarding. Instead, I spend my own time in being the helper of other businesses.
And a doctor has written in, Dr. RJK, and he or she says that subspecialization has also affected the medical field. Generally, the specialists are reducing in numbers because of peer pressures into doing subspecialization.
Yeah, so I think hospitals are being badly affected with regards to this. I think,
Because I think in the emergency room or in any other urgent situations in the hospitals, you got to do everything, right? Whatever that your hands can grab on, and within your expertise, you just got to do it. And therefore, I think both the generalists and specialists are so important.
Mm, interesting. We also have Suraj Raj who WhatsApp in saying that, hey, Joyce is jack of all trades, master of none, nothing to do with Jill. So yeah, I guess just...
That's the title of the that's the title of the article, actually.
Yeah, jack and Jill of all trades. I guess just gender equality out there for you. Yeah, but thanks for your feedback. Now let's take a quick look at this article that we have on males outnumbering females. Speaking about gender equality, we have males outnumbering females by 1 million in Malaysia and birth rate is falling.
Yeah, so this article came from the NST yesterday, and it's following the trend around the world. I think there has been a lot of reports on, especially in China and in Europe, as when birth rate is falling, and there's a lot of concern with regards to this. And I wonder now, it's catching on to us, and what are the reasons?
I think it's a global phenomenon, though, birth rates falling.
It is a global phenomenon, according to some 2012 numbers. So this is not up to date. I don't know whether that number that we have is an accurate one, but 2012, Malaysia has a male-to-female ratio of there about 1.06 to 1.07, which is kind of like many parts of the world as well. So we are around the average of the male-female ratio. But China, that number goes up to 1.2 because of the one-child policy, and many Chinese families prefer male to female. So I don't know how they engineer that. I mean, I don't even want to go there. How a male, the excess of male is engineered over females in China.
Yeah, and they stopped that policy a few years back and have struggled. And they struggled to pick it up. I think I think news reported just a few not too long ago saying that birth rate is still falling, and it's a matter of concern. But at the same time, economic must come into play here. I think it is getting much more expensive. People are very much aware of growing their families, and I think birth control is one of the option, I guess.
Yeah, the cost and how much it costs to raise a kid nowadays is a lot more expensive compared to what it was 10, 20 years ago. Well, looking at this story, we have another story where, you know, in Hungary, they are hoping to reverse the trend of, you know, falling birth rates and spur procreation through tax incentives and loan repayment waivers. So get this, guys. Hungarian women with 4 kids or more will be exempted for life from paying income tax. I think I have to migrate them because if I'm going to have more kids, I should consider that.
You want to
for
be
life,
a baby,
you know,
factory.
Exempted for life from paying income tax. And young couples will be offered interest-free loans of 10 million
36,000 US.
Yeah, thereabouts, to be cancelled once they have 3 kids.
I don't know about this, Joyce. Would that encourage you to have 4 children?
Honestly, no.
Yeah, because I mean, you can save on taxes, but you have to spend on a lot more on other things.
No,
right?
To be honest with you, I also find it difficult to juggle between working working full-time and having more kids. I think right now two is good. If I have a full-time job and have two kids, already I'm already struggling with the whole juggling act. But yeah, definitely. Well, tell us what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going into the 7 a.m. news after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.